Hi, my name is Germ. This is Germ Warfare, the Battle of Ideas, and I'm very, very privileged, extremely privileged, to be joined by the gentleman on the other side of the screen. Oh, let me just get that right. Am I correct in saying gentleman, Walt?
Yeah, that's fine. Oh, yeah, that's fine. I like that. That's better than what most people call me, so I'll go with that.
Walt Heyer, you are an inspiration to many. Those who know your name will know your story. Those who don't know your name, well, are about to hear your story. You went through gender reassignment surgery. You basically wanted to become a woman. This was what, back in the early 80s, and you regretted your decision. And I think this is the story. Let's start at the start.
yeah, that's right.
So yeah, how did it start?
Mine probably isn't much different than most people. You know, at 4 years of age, my grandmother was a seamstress, and she decided to make me a purple chiffon dress and dress me up as a little girl. And so, you know, this is 1944. You got to remember, this is over 75 years ago. So there was no words like gender dysphoria, transgender, trans. That was just an old lady dressing up her grandchild in a dress without any understanding of what the consequences might be. I mean, I think she thought it was just fun and benign, cute, and nothing would happen. And so I don't blame her. I'm not setting this up to blame grandma for anything, but I think it's important for us to understand that when you dress a boy in girls' clothing, there can be consequences, and those consequences can be quite serious. Now, you know, if you do it just once or twice for Halloween or whatever, something you're doing, probably not a big deal. But grandma did this to me for 2.5 years. So in that 2.5 years, without ever telling my parents, because she kept it a secret, obviously she kept it a secret because she thought there might be something wrong with it, or that my parents wouldn't like it, then she would get into trouble. So you have to kind of think through that part of it, that something within her told her that's need to be kept a secret. But this is the key thing for the people listening today, because it's more than just my story. When you put a boy repeatedly in a girl's dress and then affirm him and tell him how cute he looks and how wonderful he looks, keep in mind at that very same moment, you're beginning the destruction of the boy that he is. Because what we should be doing, what grandma should have been doing, was telling me how cute I was as a boy, or how handsome I was, or how, you know, brilliant I was, or, you know, the affirmation should have been for who I was. And so I'll use the word that I use when I'm talking to people, the idiocy. I mean, it's so ridiculous to take a boy, put him in a dress, and then begin to encourage them, affirm them, and in a way, indoctrinate them into thinking that they would be better off as a girl. And whether people think it out loud or understand it, if they're doing it, that's what's the end consequences are, that you're making that person think there's something wrong with them as a boy. That's what happened. So 2.5 years into this, and my parents finally found out the secret. Well, then my dad blew up. I mean, you know, he's like, what did grandma, it was my mother's mother, and they started fighting over it. And so dad's very upset, but so he's trying to figure out, how do I sort of get this purple dress out of my little boy? You know, how do I do this? So he took to becoming very rough with the discipline. You know, he's going to sort of man me up with a hardwood floor plank. And so his discipline got very strict and harsh. And I think it was almost like a blacksmith taking a iron, you know, and pounding on it, trying to shape it into something, if you can use that
analogy.
And so he was trying to shape me into a man by being very, very tough on me. But it was hurting me. I mean, that was even causing me great emotional pain as well, that he was hurting me so much. But that wasn't the end of it.
So, sorry, were you a big child or a small child?
I'm small. Yeah. I mean, I'm still small, you know. I'm just a little guy. So I was always small, smaller than my older brother, smaller than most of the other kids. So I was probably fair game for, you know, for neighborhood kids to pick on and stuff because I couldn't fight back. I was too puny. You know, if that is that a good word, puny, small?
Yeah, it's a great word.
Okay. So, so my dad's adopted brother, who was in his teens, was not the brightest individual that lived on the earth. You know, he was not too bright. He began, once he found out that I had been wearing a purple dress, he began to sexually molest me because he thought that there was something wrong with me. And so he began to sexually molest me. So if we can just stop for a minute and take a pause and go, Grandma put a boy in a purple dress needlessly, but began to kind of form in his mind, in my mind, that there was something wrong with me as a boy and I'd be better off as a girl. Because I started to believe that if I was to be loved and affirmed, I had to be a girl. And this is what happens when you bring this in. And so then my dad, with his discipline, geez, I didn't want to be the boy that was getting disciplined. I would have been better off as a girl because then I wouldn't have been getting all that discipline if I was a girl. So now you have these two elements. Then Uncle Fred comes in and begins to sexually molest me because I'd wore the purple dress. All of these things happened because I was cross-dressed by my grandmother. So I did not want to be the boy who was being sexually molested by an uncle. But these three things happened because of the purple dress.
And how old were you at this stage?
Well, by the time grandma was four, dad was about six and a half, and then about seven or eight is when I was sexually molested. So before I was 10 years old, I had all of these things going on in a confused mind of a young boy. And keep in mind, this is before 1950. This is like 1948 or 1949.
Gee. And where did you grow up? You said earlier North Carolina, is that right?
Yeah, I grew up actually in Los Angeles.
Oh, okay.
Near Burbank, and kind of in the metropolitan area. We was raised down by the train tracks near the main center of LA.
And you're now in North Carolina.
Now I'm in North Carolina. Have been for a couple of years now.
Okay, so then, all right. So all of this stuff was happening before age 10. And in your own mind, I'm assuming you can remember somewhat. What was going through your mind? Were you thinking that you were different now from other boys? Or did you, you know, was this normal? Was your home life normal for you?
Well, when you have those three things that go on, you just don't want to be who you are. I mean, it's like, boy, you know, this is a little too much and I don't know what to do with it. So I felt like there was something wrong with me and that maybe I should have been a girl.
Sure.
And because I had no reference point that I was going to be better off as a boy, I was getting whooped as a boy. And I was getting loved on by grandma when I was a girl. So you have that seed planted in your head that you're going to be affirmed and loved if you're a girl.
Right.
And so that's what was happening.
Sure. And what kind of, I'm trying to contextualize things. What kind of woman was your grandmother? If she was putting you in a dress, she must have thought it was funny and cute.
Yeah. And she, grandma was a robust, she was as wide as she was tall, and she always had, and she had an apron on, always with a big long cigarette lit, and in the apron was a half pint of whiskey all day long. So grandma liked to nip all day long. So she probably, in the years that I knew her, probably never drew a sober breath. I don't know, but she was she just thought she was a fun-loving person, but she was probably souped up pretty much with booze most of the time.
and then what happened? So you carry on with your story, if you don't mind.
Yeah, so from there on, I'm just like trying to deal with this. And so now I'm in my teens. We're now in the 1950s, and I didn't know what was going on. I didn't have these terminologies we do today, transgender, transit, and all that stuff. until a guy came out, hit the headlines, I think it was 1952, 54. Christine Jorgensen, a Marine or soldier, changes from one gender to the other. And I thought, oh, that must be what I am. So that message that I saw in the newspaper gave me the idea that's probably who I am. And so I sort of latched onto that. But keep in mind, there was no conflicting messages about you can't change genders. Nobody was arguing this nonsense back in the 50s. It was just a story that made headlines and everybody bought into it. Christine Jorgensen was a full-blown alcoholic, was a very abusive, heavy-handed male individual that cross-dressed and drank and smoked and eventually died from alcoholism. So Christine Jorgensen was probably not the best example of what life is like as a transgender, except it's classic in terms of the fact that life doesn't go really well just because you change genders.
Yeah, and you say change gender, but I suspect you're going to say that you actually can't, and that's where your story is going.
Well, yeah, I can get into let's dive into that. So intellectually speaking, there are no transgenders. Because that word suggests that you transition from one gender to the other. Well, it can't happen. It cannot happen biologically. It cannot happen scientifically. It cannot happen medically. So it doesn't happen. So it's a farce. It's fantasy. It's nonsense. Two words that are really misused are transition and transgender. There is no transition and there are no transgenders. There's only two species, male, female, that's it. You can't invent things. You can suggest that people can identify. You know, identifying as a female does not make you one.
Correct, yeah.
You know, I mean, I could identify as Trump today, right? That doesn't make me Trump, right? I mean, but what we should be laughing every time somebody says, I'm a male and I'm a female. But we don't. It's like, what's the matter with that person? And so what we know is that this is gaining ground primarily because it's a political power tool. And because they can fundraise money with it, you have these groups divided. You know, you've got the left who in our country who just raises all kinds of money for this, and they want to sort of nurture this group, kind of like grandma did me. You know, they want to affirm them, encourage them. They don't really care what happens to their life.
Yeah.
They just want them as part of the voting block. I mean, that's a proper amount of votes for them, and they're going to encourage and nurture that. On the Republican side, you know, we're more interested in saving lives and preventing people from going through something that is totally bizarre and totally unnecessary and foolish. And what we know is that people who engage in this behavior and go through these surgical procedures and identify in a different gender, 18 times more likely to die from suicide.
Sure.
So, you know, these are not just fun facts. It's just what it is. And that study came out of Sweden. People can look it up.
Yeah.
I've been helping people now for 25 years, and I've been involved in this for 75 years on some level. So I'm not speaking from somebody who picked up a book and looked at something. And no, I have actually worked with hundreds of people and spoken with thousands of individuals who come to my website, sexchangeregret.com.
Well, I mean, and we're going to get to that. Let's just quickly go back, if you will, to your teenage years. This is obviously a very important part now in every person's life. At this stage now, you were very confused. May I ask, were you gay? Did you think you were gay? Anything like that?
Well, no, I wasn't gay. And in fact, I'm so glad you brought this up. In the years that I've worked with hundreds and hundreds, probably thousands of people, 90% of the individuals that have contacted me and that I've worked with are heterosexual males that are not homosexual, never engaged in homosexuality, never had same-sex attraction. So it's an issue of identity and not of sexuality.
Sure. Sure.
You see, well, if we can stop and try to put our heads around this in an intellectual way, what grandma was doing to me was damaging my identity,
not
my sexuality. In other words, what I looked like, what I was presenting to people, what was going to get affirmed. Sexually, I was still attracted to females. And I'll be perfectly honest. The 8 years that I lived as Laura, I didn't engage in any kind of relationships with anybody under any circumstances. I just didn't. I was absent from that because I was trying to work on my identity, not my sexuality.
You know, what you're saying, Walt, is actually profound. It's not something I think I've ever considered, the difference between identity and sexuality. So in other words, let me just get this right. So you weren't confused about your sexuality. You just lost your identity in terms of your gender. And you thought that perhaps living as a female would have been beneficial.
Let's put it in a different term. Let's take the word gender out and replace it with the word persona. What you see, that my persona. So, and that's really what the people are dealing with today. What they present, what persona do they present? Is it a male or female? That has nothing to do with sexuality. In fact, most of the people who identify as a different gender and are homosexual are actually fall into the group we call drag queens. They're very flamboyant. They're much more, you know, you look at them, their eyelashes are a foot long. I mean, everything is exaggerated. And,
yes.
And so that's a whole different group. And that's why we identify them as drag queens, because in technical terms, drag queens are really not what we would consider to be a typical transgender. Drag queen is doing it for the purpose of performance or the purpose of
theater,
art or
theater,
something of that nature.
Yeah. Yeah. So if I've got it correct, you decided that you were going to undergo the actual transition you were 30 something. Have I got it correct?
Yeah. About 38 years old.
Yeah. And how did you get to that point where you decided, all right, I'm actually going to try and change my body to become female?
Well, you know, I didn't, again, you know, at 38, I started going to a therapist, you know, one of those, they call them gender specialists. First, let me say, whatever you do, do not go to a gender specialist. Those guys are crazy. And they will only drive you down a pathway of ruin. You know, this is like the devil. Don't go there. Go to somebody who doesn't approve of changing people's body parts, okay?
Right.
They're Frankenstein helpers. You know, they're making Frankenstein monsters. You know, that's all they're doing. So we forget that nonsense, you know? So I went to one of these gender specialists and told him my story, much like I'm telling you today. And he goes, oh, he said, you have gender dysphoria and what you need is hormones and therapy, hormone therapy and all that. I'm going, oh my gosh, okay, and surgery. So I kind of went along with it. And so I got the hormones. I started going through this. I was married and had two children, you know, and I'm living in a nice house. I'm an executive for American Honda Motor Company. I was one of the top brass making big money. But I was confused about my persona, who I was. And even though I was married, I'd been married for 17 years. So, he told me, you know, the fix for what you're going through is hormones and surgery. So I spent some time, and finally, by the age of 42, I'd had enough hormones. I had enough counseling. I said, okay. So in 1983, after divorcing my wife, leaving my kids behind, I selfishly embraced the idea that I needed to change, right? And so I went and put myself on the table and let them carve me up like a piece of sushi. And, you know, supposedly change. They didn't change anything. You know, all they did was alter my body.
I don't want to get obviously too personal, but when you say alter your body, what do you mean?
Well, they take your genitals off.
Okay.
And reshape them and to make it appear as though you're a female.
Right.
And so this is absolutely the biggest false story in the world. Number one, you actually keep your penis. They just invert it. It doesn't go away. The idea that it goes away, it's not that they keep it. You have all of the same parts. They just reverse them.
It's just acting then.
Yes. You start acting out this role, hormones, change your appearance. They help you change your voice. So, whoever it was said, all the world is a stage. Well, there's no bigger stage than there is for people who go through this. And so the idea that when you subject yourself to a self-mutilation, what we have to understand, what I'm beginning to understand, and I'm working with people now to understand what changing, this idea of changing genders is actually self-destructive behavior. You're destroying, you're not becoming another person, you're destroying who you are. Sure. If we can get that through our heads, we're not changing, or we're not transitioning, the only thing we're doing is totally destroying who we really are. And then by virtue of destroying who we are, we adopt this phony persona and say that we're a female when that is totally false. There's no way anybody can ever prove they're a female. There is no objective proof that a person has ever changed. Not anybody has ever actually changed from male to female or female to male. Never happened.
Walt, what do you say then when somebody says, I was born in the wrong body?
Yeah. Well, okay, then I want to know, why is it you don't like who you are? And I've had these conversations 100 times. And 100% of the time, after spending time talking to him, much like you and I are today, and I'll ask him, why is it you don't like who you are? What happened that caused you to not like who you are? 100% of the time, they can tell me what happened to them. Like I told you today, what happened to me? I was put in a dress. I was physically hit by my grandmother. And I was sexually abused. Now, strangely enough, a large portion of the people who identify as a different gender are heterosexual men who are married, as a matter of fact, were sexually abused as children. So what I found is that sexual abuse, emotional abuse, physical abuse, and psychological abuse by parents, or sometimes I find these people were in, maybe they were in foster care, maybe they had some neighbor that abused them. There's always a story, there's a backstory to why they want to destroy who they really are and then adopt this idea that they can become someone else. It's totally delusional to think that you can change and become someone. You can't do it. And so the message here is, why are we sort of supporting the idea? We're actually collaborating with the insanity when we tell them, oh yes, you can change genders. I'm not gonna do that. You can't.
When you had come out of theater, what went through your mind? Can you remember?
I thought, wow, this is absolutely the biggest, most destructive mistake I have ever made. And how do I repair my life?
Did you think that immediately? Did you not have a sense of excitement?
Oh, when I was going through this, I had a sense of excitement for maybe a year or two. Maybe three, I don't know. There was a period of time where you have this euphoria. It's sort of like I always liken it to the drunk who goes to the bar and he sits there and he hoists several and he's feeling really good, and everything is fine and wonderful. And then the next morning he wakes up and he goes, oh my God, what did I do? It's kind of like that, except this happens 3 years later. What do I do? And so, you get drunk on power.
And what did you do then when this started occurring to you?
Yeah, well, then I started becoming much more interested in the psychological side, and I started studying at UC Santa Cruz in California the psychology behind all this. And I began to realize one of the first stories I read about was something, some boy who became a girl, and his story was about a term called separation anxiety. I'd never heard of separation anxiety. It didn't make any sense to me. So I read the story. It was from Cornell University, and the boy was very close to his mother, and his mother suddenly passed away. And in this dynamic that they were talking about, this boy becoming a girl, he actually became a girl so that he could make himself feel like his mother never died. In other words, he took on his mother's identity to keep her alive. You see the psychology behind that. He actually didn't want her to die, so he became a girl himself in an effort to keep her alive. So he identified as a female. Separation anxiety. He had anxiety about her leaving, so he became a female.
Good heavens. And you were Laura Jensen for about 8 years.
That's right.
And you had left your wife behind, your kids. How were they around you?
Well, my daughter refused to ever speak to me again. You know, she was like totally devastated. I mean, the betrayal of a father doing that to a child. I mean, what I did to my kids, no father should ever do to their kids. I mean, that is like so selfish, so self-centered. I am most ashamed of what I did to my children, of anything that I've done. I'm every day, I thank God for the fact that I was redeemed, and pray for my children every single day, twice a day, that they're going to be okay. But I have a good relationship with them today. But you know, this was 1983, so I'm 35 years into this, and they see now my daughter calls me her hero, my son is a good friend. So you know, it's all good. But it took all this time for them to see that I was going to make it back, and through the power and grace of Christ, I did.
Yeah, and that little bit there now is quite interesting. So a big part of your story, Walt, is Christianity.
Yeah.
What? Tell me about
yeah.
that.
Yeah, you know, it didn't come easy for me. I was kind of kicking and screaming. And I just call myself a person of faith. I believe that Jesus Christ is who he says he is, and I come at it from that approach. And, you know, I'm not a big scriptural reading guy. I just have faith. I trust God is who he is. And so I started going back to church as Laura and, you know, trying to see if that was going to be acceptable to Christ as me living as Laura. And I found out during a prayer that I was going through my fourth step from alcohol and drug recovery. I was meeting with my therapist, and we started to pray one day. And during that prayer, the Lord Jesus Christ, I could see, had come. He was coming to me. He was coming down toward me. And I looked up, and it's like, my eyes were closed, but I could see him visually coming toward me. And he had his arms stretched out toward me, and I was looking at where he was looking with my eyes closed again in this prayer. And he was looking at this little baby in front of me, and I looked at the baby, and I said, that baby's me. He's coming for me. And I was totally aware that he was coming for me, and he picked me up. Picked up the baby, and I knew that was me. But I knew then, and he turned to me and he said, you will be safe with me forever. And he disappeared. And I realized when the prayer was over, that was the day the Lord came to hold me, redeem and restore me, so that I could work and live through him to honor and glorify him for the rest of my life. And so that's what I've done, and tried to bring other people to that place of redemption and restoration through Christ.
This was while you were Laura. is that right?
Well, I was. This was the turning point. You know, I mean, right. I was at a conflict. I mean, during this time, I was living partly as Laura and partly as Walt. You know, I hadn't quite made the turn. You know, but that was it. That was the time. If you want to talk about transition, that was the transition when Christ grabbed me and I knew that he was bringing me to him to redeem and restore me so that I could live again the way he designed me to be. I'm back to being, you know, the little boy that grandma should have been approving. Grandma should have been honoring, glorifying the little boy. I mean, I was a scruffy little kid who liked cowboy boots, you know?
Do you like cowboy boots today?
I love cowboy boots. I love cowboy buckles. I have a big black cowboy hat, and I'm still living out that little kid's right in here.
Let's quickly go back to the... Yo, I don't know the correct terms. You must forgive me. Detransitioning, is that right? When you decided to go back to Walt?
Yeah, we call it detransitioning. It's unwinding the nonsense.
Mm. How? Yeah. How though? Because now I don't understand the biology, but I'm guessing at this stage your body is pretty broken physiologically.
Yeah. Well, there's certain things you can't repair. You know.
I'm sure.
You can have what they call a phalloplasty, which means they do the surgery that they do for the women who want to be men, and they call that a phalloplasty. So they attach this instrument, you know. Mm. The thing is, it doesn't function in the way that it was intended to function. It's, if I may say so, it's much more of what I call a Christmas tree ornament than it is something that functions. So it's, you know, it's there for decoration. To make you feel like something is okay, but it's not. So you don't fully get repaired body-wise, but there is a way to be fully repaired and restored in your life through Christ. So I'm there. I mean, I'm a healthy guy. I mean, 80 years old, I'm out lifting blocks. I can, you know, pour concrete. I go out and hike and walk and do things. I'm active. And so that's the spirit that the Holy Spirit that lives in me, that gives me this drive to help people. I mean, I have helped hundreds of people find their way back because they listen to my story and they go, God, you know, I didn't know that you could detransition. I thought I was stuck. I want people to know you're not stuck. I want people to know they didn't even change you.
Right.
You know, when I was sitting across from a guy, he says, what do I do to detransition? And I'm in a Starbucks coffee shop, and I said, you see the clothing store over there? Go get some men's clothes, and that's all you need to do, and get a haircut and take the makeup off. You're on your way, baby.
So I want to summarize this a little bit, what you've been saying. So it's mostly, almost entirely, it's an identity problem. It's not a sexual problem. And it often is related to your upbringing.
Yeah, I want to say that there are a group of people, like we mentioned, that will be homosexual. Mm. And so they have a combination of issues where they're homosexual and have the transgender identity issue. Yes. But I can tell you that in the group of people that I work with, 90% of them are heterosexual men. Many of them are dealing with things that... we can go into it another time if you want to get on the thing, like autogynephilia, transvestic fetish disorders.
Sure.
But most of these things happened during childhood. I have not found something that didn't happen during childhood.
Yeah. I've got one or two questions from our audience, if you don't mind. So yes, someone wants to know, did you find that people treated you differently once they found out that you were transgender?
I didn't run into all this hype that people talk about. The only people who treated me real different were some of my close friends who just couldn't get their head around what happened. But I would say most of my close friends accepted me. They didn't understand it, but they weren't, they didn't abuse me. They weren't difficult to me. The only thing that I found was I couldn't get employment. I had a very hard time getting a job. So that part was there. But for the most part, I didn't experience, I looked very passable. And so I think that made a big difference.
Do you know any, or do you know of any, people like yourself, men and women, who are happy with attempting to change their gender?
I do. You know, there are people who, they're happy, but I've had them contact me 3 or 4 years later and say they're no longer happy. I've had people as 30 years after the quote transition wish they hadn't done it and want help to detransition. So they lived that way for 30 years. Most of the people experience regret somewhere between 8 and 20 years. That's where your biggest regret factor is.
And I mean, I think, and that's also an interesting thing, because that regret, I mean, have you ever been able to get rid of that regret?
Well, I've been able to find out how to deal with the regret, but you know, part of that is being able to help and work with other people and see their lives come back around, and that's the exciting part. I mean, I'm not going to sit at my house and say that I'm a victim. I'm not.
Yeah.
You know, I'm out there working and helping people. You know, I've got 7 books. I've got a website. I work with people every single day. You know, I'm on some kind of radio or TV. I've done 15 documentary films.
Yeah.
You know, I'm out there producing things. And so that's pretty exciting.
Well, if I may ask, are there warning signs that parents can look out for in the beginning, and when your little boy or your little girl starts acting in a way that you yourself, Walt, might go, oh, hang on, there's something I need to keep an eye on here. How do you deal with that situation in a nutshell?
Yeah, there's warning signs. Watch the computer, because many of the kids get on and they do these. There's a lot of gaming today, and many of these games have pornography in them, and some of the pornography in those games is transgender oriented, and they get hooked on it and they begin to believe they can do it. So what it isn't so much the grandma like I had today, it's the computer is the grandma for these kids, teaching them that they can change genders. So if a kid begins to say that they want to change genders, or they see a change in the behavior, the parents really need to sit down and say, where did you get the idea that you can become someone else? Where did this come from? Did you get it on the internet? Did you find out from a friend? How did you find out at school? You know, so there's somebody teaching them this absolutely foolish nonsense that they can become someone else when they cannot do it. It's a lie.
Yeah, I mean, you're quite blunt about it. I mean, you said it's a mental illness and it's idiotic. And you yourself can speak from experience.
Yeah, I think there are some people that don't have a mental illness. I think some people are doing it just because they are social activists who want things to change. And so they do it really just to sort of push back on society. And so they're doing it more from an activist standpoint, not so much from a mental illness standpoint. But I think the heterosexual group of people that I work with, most of them are suffering from things like bipolar disorder, dissociative disorder, schizophrenia, dissociative, all these other disorders. Body dysmorphia is a big one. They've been emotionally or psychologically or sexually abused, and they're broken. And then they're told that they need to have hormone therapy and rearrange their body parts to help them. And the reason why my work is so successful and I have so many contacts is because the people who are changing their genders are failing to help them. If they were doing a good job at helping people, you wouldn't see me, because there would be nobody regretting it. I mean, the fact that I'm here is proof that the whole transgender stuff is a total fraud.
Walt, I mean, I'm. It's. I was telling you before we went live that, I mean, someone like me, right, who has never, thankfully, been through your experience, it's difficult for me to speak because I get called names, a bigot, all sorts of things. It seems like it's a very difficult battle to fight. How do you even begin to fight it?
Well, you know, I don't bother fighting it because the people contact me, and the people contacting me and saying they're contacting me because they regret it. So, you know, these are the people that I'm working with. I mean, I don't have to convince anybody that there's regret. I've had up to 355,000 people contact my website in 1 year.
Good heavens.
And if there were no regret, no one would be contacting me.
Gee, that's a big number, hey? So, I mean, what your president right now, Joe Biden, is doing with the Navy SEALs, I mean, I'm guessing you don't approve of that.
No, you know, they're men. For gosh sakes, you know, we're supposed to have a lean, mean fighting machine, and you don't put a lean, mean fighting machine in high heel shoes and a dress and say, go fight a war. I mean, because it's going to demoralize the rest of the soldiers that are there. I mean, the military is full of testosterone, not estrogen. And that estrogen is not going to work well with the testosterone, folks, I guarantee you.
How do you respond to somebody? Can I read you just maybe the opening paragraph of an email that I received today?
Sure.
After I told people that you were coming on my show, and sure. This is the kind of email that I'm sure you get a lot. But someone said here, where is it now? I don't have it in front of me. All right. So the email basically was saying that I'm only listening to one side of the story, and that I'm disregarding that person's lived experience, that person's truth. You know, you might have your truth and your story, Walt, but theirs is different. And I'm in no position to say that there are only two genders and he must be a man.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. Most of the men who are doing this that are adult men have a condition called autogynephilia. And I'll explain what that is. They dress up in women's clothing and they look at themselves in the mirror, and what they see in the mirror is the object of their own affection. They become sexually aroused by seeing themselves in women's clothing. It's a sexual fetish disorder.
Sure.
And so a vast majority of adult heterosexual men are suffering from what we call autogynephilia. That will be, in large part, people entering the military. Some of them will have a sexual fetish disorder where they become sexually aroused by a piece of women's clothing, underwear, stockings, whatever it is that brings that about. These are serious mental disorders. And the fact is, people want everyone to ignore that they have them. I'm sorry, I can't do it. The fact of the matter is, I'm working almost every day with somebody who's suffering from one of these disorders because no one else will talk about it, but I will.
Do you get disappointed when you see all these stories in the media of celebrities and people saying that they're not going to misgender their child? They're going to let the child decide what they are, if they're a boy or a girl, you know, that kind of thing. It upsets me, and I'm pretty certain it upsets you.
Well, the only people who are misgendering anybody are the advocates telling somebody you can change your gender. So that's when they get misgendered. I haven't ever misgendered anybody.
Right.
You know, if there's a guy in a dress, he's a man.
In a dress.
And these are men in dresses. They're not transgender. They haven't transitioned. They've taken hormones and they've cut off body parts. They've done something cosmetically. Unfortunately, they can't prove biologically, scientifically, or medically that they ever changed genders. That's a total, absolute impossibility.
Yeah, and I mean, I agree with you, but it's wonderful hearing it coming from you. And I know that in that documentary, I Want My Sex Back, which I do hope that those watching or listening now will go and watch. It's on YouTube. It's been watched something like 13 million times. It's really great. It's you and a few others being interviewed, and you all say the same thing, that you all realize that it's up here. It's not about sexuality, yep. and in many cases, as you say, it's to do with your identity, and it's about trying to find yourself. And a lot of that has to do with society. And I'm leading on to a question quickly. I know we're gonna wrap up soon, but there was a question that somebody was asking. Do you think that the internet or social media has had a very bad or negative effect on all of this in modern times?
Oh, they've stimulated an interest in this, and they've propagated a group of people who otherwise never would be doing this, because transgenders are not born. They're made out of social trauma. They're made out of something that happened to them, and they find, well, this is probably better for me than what happened to me before, so I'll try this. And so they try it for a while, then they realize, you know, transgenders are, quote, transgenders until they're no longer a transgender, and they regret it and go back to who they really are.
Would you say that transgenderism is a social construct?
Transgenderism is a made-up idea that people change and go into society trying to make people believe they've changed. So, transgenderism is a construct of something that happened, something where you haven't dealt properly with some emotional, psychological, or sexual issue that happened to you, and it manifests itself in you identifying by someone who you can never, ever become.
Sure. Well, listen, Walt, I know that you have to go. It's a fascinating conversation. So many different kinds of questions that one can ask, but I think that the overarching comment from you is pretty blatant, is that you cannot be somebody else. You can only be yourself, and yourself is what you're born with.
You can identify as someone else. You just can't be someone else. You can look at my book, Trans Life Survivors.
Yeah.
And my other book, Paper Genders. Get those two books. People really understand it.
Yeah, I'm definitely, I haven't had enough time to read them. I'm definitely going to buy the second one that you mentioned, Paper Genders, I think you said. That one looks very interesting. Let me just quickly use this opportunity to plug where people can find you. So sexchangeregrets.com. It's a great website. I've been on it a couple of times, and of course your own website is more about your sort of Christian ministry,
right?
Which I've been on as well, and it's got a great series of videos that I watched with you and a pastor.
Yes, Jeff Farrar, and that's great. I mean, it really shows you how a pastor can minister to somebody and bring them through this process in a way where they can bring them back to wholeness.
And if somebody wants to contact you, they can just do it via your website.
Yeah, absolutely.
Walt, it's been an absolute pleasure. May I once again say that you are a true gentleman.
Thank you. Well, so are you. I've had a pleasure doing this. And so you take care. If you have any questions, don't hesitate to send me an email.
Thank you, Walt. It's been great. My name is Germ. This is Germ Warfare, the Battle of Ideas.